before we get to the new entry in the omnibus,
cold open
for the very first time, we just want to make a very special announcement.
Futurelings and listeners and radio stations around the world.
Of all eras.
Of all time, of all types and times.
And species.
Omnibus Project, as of today, is an independent podcast.
An independent entity and reference work. This is the very first entry in the time capsule that we were releasing, not under the imprimatur of our friends at How Stuff Works, Stuff Media. Now,
and, now a wholly owned subsidiary of iHeartMedia. Our show started on How Stuff Works, and they've been a fine host and a fine friend, but we felt like we needed independence.
It was time for Omnibus to be its own grown up.
Partly because the salt mines where we're going to store all these archives needed to be a wholly owned subsidiary of Omnibus Project.
We have acquired the land in Wyoming, and we are ready to go.
Anyway, so that's going to change some things about the show. Advertising is going to change. We're going to have oversight over the ads that run on the program.
Creatively, the show should not change. It has all the same aims and goals and aesthetic that you are probably long weary of.
Right. It has Ken and it has me. We have a bell.
What else do you need?
But we are going to launch a Patreon to help us fund the purchase of the salt mines and the maintenance of the solar panels that are going to keep this archive.
If Patreon or a similar crowdfunding mechanism exists in your era, and it would delight you to be part of this endeavor, we invite you to go to patreon.com/omnibusproject and get in on the ground floor.
That's patreon.com/omnibusproject.
Do you have to type in code omnibus?
Yeah, that's right. For 20% additional donation
to donate
the show.
More, you can type omnibus.
Also, we can refinance your credit card debt at patreon/omnibusproject.
We would appreciate any expression of your love for the show. It will help us move forward as an independent reference work and time capsule.
That's right. Please promote us to all of your friends and family,
especially the wealthy ones.
Get the word out there about Omnibus as we venture out into this brand new chapter of our lives as independent operators. I've always been an independent media person. Ken has been just a slave of big media his
I've
whole career.
I've been a smooth operator my whole career.
Smooth operator.
And this is our chance for Omnibus to join us in the independent sphere.
So without further ado, your first independent Omnibus.
For the first time,
receiving this message.
We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus.
You have accessed entry 803.MT2220, certificate number 2720. It's a short certificate number.
Perhaps our shortest yet.
The monkey selfie.
The monkey pressed the button. I've got no qualms about that, but the work that went behind it in terms of putting the camera on a tripod, setting the image up, it wasn't that the monkey stole the camera, went behind a bush and photographed it all by itself. it required a large input from myself. And that's why I hold copyright.
John, I follow you on Instagram.
Yeah, it's a great experience.
Which still exists here in the early 21st century. You're telling me it's a great experience?
Yeah, it is.
It's a great experience for you to have the honor of me following you?
No, I'm just saying following me on Instagram is a great experience regardless of who you are.
Looking at pictures of the Vilnius City Hall is a great... It's true. Mm-hmm. And I, from your Instagram, I gather that you are, although we are of the same generation, you are part of selfie culture.
Yes.
With a capital S and a capital C.
I realized at an early point along the way that the resistance to joining selfie culture is part of this whole like reaction to vanity that's, I think, a pretty human inhibition, right?
We're suspicious of people who are not self-deprecating. Is that what you mean?
Well, if you think about it, I mean, every religion has a comment about vanity. Vanity is a thread throughout literature, like vanity goeth before a fall. We're all very cautious, and in contemporary terms, even distancing ourselves from a moral component to it, vanity is unseemly.
It's impolite to talk about your accomplishments.
Right.
And maybe for good reason. I mean, not all people who talk themselves up are narcissists, but all narcissists certainly talk themselves up. So there's a related cluster of personality types that you avoid.
But you also, even if you just consider a person sitting in front of a mirror all day examining either their beauty or their flaws, it feels like... not just a waste of their time, but also like a mental disorder or a sign that something isn't right in their world.
It might be to the detriment of them caring about other larger concerns.
And so selfie culture, which is kind of at its grossest, you know, like a terrible car crash, and then someone stands in front of it and tries to get it in the background. You know, do you remember that picture of the guy where he was in a plane crash? And he was floating on a raft and took a selfie of himself with the plane in the background sinking. It was a genius selfie, absolutely genius.
It's a once in a lifetime opportunity.
But the idea that he wanted himself in the photo rather than just documenting the plane crash was pretty hilarious. And we've all seen it. We've all seen every event you're at now. There's someone trying to take a selfie.
But here's the thing. I don't actually mind it. I was always told, I took the world's most boring vacation photos because I would just take a picture of the building or of the tomb or of the waterfall or whatever it was. And later, you don't want that. It just becomes some dad's boring living room slideshow in 1965. You want to see you in front of the waterfall and your friends and family in front of the waterfall.
Not just you, but the insight, I guess, that I got in looking at Instagram, where you're just looking at other people's idea of, you know, what they're trying to, what their photographic slideshow is.
And what they want the world to think of them.
Of them.
Yeah.
And I realized that every single picture on Instagram is a form of selfie. If you're out taking pictures of the roses in your garden, you're not doing that because anybody wants to see the roses in your garden. You're doing it because you want to be seen and known as someone who is taking pictures of the roses in their garden, right? You are promoting a version of yourself on Instagram. There's no other reason for it. It is not an archive of your photos. It's not a photo album. It's a social media sharing space. And if I look at someone's feed and it's just photos of their dog or their roses, after a while, the vanity is there. It's soaked in vanity. It's just the vanity that anybody cares about your dog. And what we really want to see is you. That's why I'm following you on Instagram. It's not to see pictures of your dog. It's not to see your curation of what you think I want to see. What I want to see is you.
It starts to feel weird and anonymous if there's too much where you don't see the person.
Weirdly, like it starts to feel
sterile or
no, it's the opposite. It feels like your self-consciousness is the ghost in the room. The fact that you won't put selfie
weird
up,
facial deformity
or just like, what's your problem? Get over yourself. It ends up feeling like you have a bigger you have a bigger vanity in not posting an occasional photo of yourself just to contextualize, like, who is this person that loves roses? Who is this person that loves their dog? Show us you, your face, your that's the whole business of social media.
Yeah, you want a tour guide. You want a Rod Serling
right.
to walk you through this life.
So I started putting up selfies unapologetically because I recognize that people every once in a while want – and, you know, and you can still be self-deprecating and
– Selfie-deprecating?
Selfie-deprecating. Selfie-deprecating-y.
Right. You often do the ironic distance in your, yes, here's me standing in front of the thing.
Here I am.
I think I look really good.
I'm super handsome right now.
Often it's the ironic self-deprecation that borders into, like, self-praise, you know.
Well, and also there's a vernacular of selfie. And you can play within that vernacular, sure. Right? You're not
cute, RN. Might delete later.
That's right. Or, like, I don't have a selfie stick, but you can kind of get that sort of selfie stick. Here's me in front of the plane crash stuff.
Because you have arms that are 3.5 feet long.
That. But also because I've looked at knowyourmeme.com so many times, I know every style. I know every selfie style. And I feel like I'm not, I feel like most of the people I know who are on Instagram, whether or not they are, their Instagram has a theme or not, whether it's, I mean, I have friends that, like, there's an Instagram that I follow that's just bathrooms in the backstages of rock clubs. But every once in a while, unless it's something where the owner is completely invisible, even the guy that does, like, vanishing Seattle pictures of all the buildings that are getting torn down in Seattle, every once in a while he puts his picture in there.
Because you have to.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's like the unseen character on the sitcom. When do we get to see Maris or Vera or whoever? Like, it's really like, stop, you know, show us Blofeld's face, damn it.
Yeah. But I enjoy that. I enjoy Instagram, even though I know it's a wholly owned subsidiary of Facebook, which is
a wholly owned subsidiary of Satan.
Of Satan. That's right. But it's still one of the places on the internet where I feel like there's not a ton of toxicity. It's still somewhat playful.
I find that most backlash to selfie culture, first of all, is stupid because for the whole time photography has been in existence, portraits have been more interesting than shots of Yosemite National Park.
Right.
Sorry, Ansel Adams. Canceled. Well, like, cancel Adams.
Burn.
But also because a lot of the critique tends to be misogynistic, I think.
Oh, interesting.
You know, because we associate selfie culture with young people and particularly young women.
Right.
And often it becomes, you know, who are these vain, shallow young things to constantly be flaunting their youth and beauty and shallowness?
The filter aspect of it, too. And, you know, there are a lot of selfies where there's an overlay of some kind of...
Sure. Puppy nose, big eyes.
Yeah, that becomes its own language and a thing that...
But who created the world where women got the impression that they should look good in pictures? That, you know, it's not like we're innocent, you know?
Satan? Are we back to Satan again?
I think it might be Satan operating through one of his best instruments, men.
That guy.
So, like, you know, why not? Why shouldn't young women take control of their image and have big kawaii eyes? Or I don't actually use these filters. What are there?
Well,
what else is there?
I mean, there's so many, but there's no reason not. And the thing is, the criticisms, you know, they come through proxies. There are just as many, if not more, women who are yelling at young women about taking selfies this than there are men. We're afraid of youth. We're afraid of unselfconsciousness.
Yeah.
And that's a big part, I think, is unselfconsciousness seems dangerous to those of us who walk around in a prison of like self-awareness and shame.
Yeah, look how confident and unmediated these young people are. How I hate it.
When will they be destroyed by shame like I was?
I'm going to write a think piece for The Atlantic about it. Is there a Popeye filter? That's what I would use.
R.
I don't think Popeye says R.
Doesn't he say R?
Have you ever heard of Popeye?
Popeye.
He's a pirate, right?
Who says R? Right?
Like, I want a filter that makes everyone kind of like, it makes your eyes kind of squinty. Mm-hmm. It gives you one, like a big bicep with an anchor and then a little tiny tricep.
A
corn cob pipe and a big lantern jaw.
You look like the grandma from Lil Abner.
Wait, so to you, that's a mainstream reference, but you don't know who Popeye is. You were born in the very narrow window when Popeye had gone out, but the grandma from Little Abner.
There are every kind of filter you can make yourself. You've surely seen the ones recently with it, where the Russian government figured out a way to capture all of our photographs by
making us look old.
Old or young.
I took one of me and I looked like you.
Yeah, I know. Right. I didn't do it because one, I don't want the Russians to know what I look like, although they already do. But also I didn't want to look any older than I do. I already look like a filter of an old John Roderick put over me.
I feel like it's a good fortuitous omen to see what you look like old, because that means you're going to survive to be that age. You've created you've put in the mind of the universe, here's what I'm going to look like in my 70s. Please do not drop a grand piano on my head as I walk down Third Avenue.
That filter really was great.
It's very convincing.
I saw some pictures of friends where I was like, wow, that is what you're going to look like old. And you look great.
I do love looking at old movies and TV where they put age makeup on the lead. And we now know what William Shatner looks like old. And it's not like that.
No.
Because they just look like themselves with like kind of grease paint under their eyes or some of that high school musical, high school play white stuff in their hair.
But this filter somehow manages to take the collagen out of your skin.
It knew what kind of toupee I was going to get and when. It put me in a baggy sweater.
What I'm afraid it doesn't know is like how much weight I'm going to gain.
That's true.
And I'm grateful.
There should be a slider so you can go whoop, whoop, whoop. Some selfies are actually filter-free and unmediated and actually capture what the moment looked like. And often, you know, we'll throw away 19 selfies to get the one where we looked really good.
Right.
But sometimes the first one comes out right. And
it's often the case
for you.
Well, it's
for an attractive man.
It's the case of almost every creative thing I've found is that you do a thing, and often you do a thing just even as a test. Like, let's just run this one time and try, you know, you put pen to paper or, take a selfie or you lay down a vocal track and then you listen to it or you look at it and you go, I can do that one better. And you immediately begin to mediate what was a spontaneous or semi-spontaneous creation of a thing. And then you can do 40 more takes. You can take 40 more pictures and you end up going back to the first one.
It's not just because it was accident. There was something pure and visceral and...
Yeah, and your desire
intuitive about the first attempt.
What your desire is to somehow make your double chin less prominent, but as soon as you start to jut your chin out, then all of a sudden
put your tongue on the roof of your mouth.
Yeah,
then futurelings, if you have a tongue and a mouth, it makes your chin look a little smaller.
I've never ever talked to that.
Don't do it while you talk. Don't do it in a video. You're Scooby Doo. As Popeye would say, "Rutrow, Reggie."
But I do feel like first takes are often end up, and it's very hard to just take a first take and be like, there it is. I never do a second take.
One take Roderick.
Because you always want to, you know, you always want to try and better it. And sometimes you can.
There is data on this. I've seen studies of beginner's luck, which says that beginner's luck is actually a thing. And it's for that very reason. You know, the first time you try to do something, you're just going on intuition and muscle memory, which I guess are very, not muscle memory, but, you know, your body's internal sense of how to move and where stuff goes and how to sound and look. And once you try to mediate it, that goes away. Like, I have been skeet shooting once in my life, and I was so good at it. you kind of think, like, you know, what are the odds that I can shoot a thing flying through the air with a rifle? I've never held a rifle.
It's a shotgun, though, which does make it easier.
That makes it a lot easier. Slightly easier. Well, now I understand why I was so good.
Lots of bullets.
That makes it a lot easier. But I've never held a shotgun either.
Right.
And I was pretty good. And I looked up beginner's luck, and it turns out, your brain is intuitively has evolved to be good at, you know, aiming at stuff or bowling or whatever the task is. But as soon as you try to think, I bet I can get a little better at this, as soon as you become more conscious of what you're doing, your performance slides.
There was one particular night in a little roadside bar in Romania where I was the greatest pool player who had ever lived.
I'm glad this is not a sex story.
It resulted in me being the greatest Romanian sex lover of all time. And it's sex lover. It's a different kind. But no, I mean, they carried me out of that bar on their shoulders. I was this incredible pool shark.
It was not the first time you'd ever played pool, but it's the first time you shot pool in Romania.
It was just one of those nights where I put no thought into what I was doing because I was
you became a beginner again.
I did. I was an absolute beginner.
because of substances you'd ingested.
I was a born again virgin. No, I was clean and sober many years at that point. No, it was just that I think it was a thing where there was so much else going on in my life and in that moment that I couldn't think about pool because I was absolutely just swimming as hard as I could to keep my nose above the water.
It's nice, right, that we all have a really good pool player, a really good skeet shooter, a really good selfie taker inside us.
Yes.
If we can just unleash it.
Yes.
It's a nice thought.
You know, Ken, 98% of our brains are busy doing artwork the entire time.
In my opinion, 98% of our brains is just showing up. Sometimes the great selfie or the great first attempt or whatever is an accident. And I think that's exemplified by our story today of a very unusual selfie that was taken in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
On the island of Sulawesi lives a primate called the Celebes crested macaque.
Oh, sure. I know the Celebes crested macaque.
The CCM.
Yeah.
Celebes being the old name for Sulawesi. I think it's kind of a Bombay Mumbai thing mm-hmm. where I'm not supposed to say Celebes anymore.
No, is it Bangladesh? Is it Kampuchea? Which is it? Do you remember?
Cambodia is Kampuchea.
Cambodia is not Kampuchea.
No, Kampuchea is it's like the Pol Pot name. Isn't that the Khmer Rouge name for it? Now we're supposed to say Cambodia. Now Burma and Myanmar is the fraught one because Myanmar is official, but it's also like was made official by a military dictatorship. So are you giving lip service to awful Burmese military dictators when you agree to their Myanmar language?
Right.
In this case, I'm going to say Sulawesi for the island, and I'm going to say Celebes for the macaque.
Okay, I think that's
and if that's insufficiently woke, I will wait to get your letters.
No, that seems right. I mean, Duran Duran made their Rio video in Sri Lanka with Ceylonese macaques.
Why is it on the Rio record? It should have been on their Sri Lanka record. The macaque is a monkey that lives on Sulawesi and I think another nearby island. The locals call it the Yaki or the Wolai. It is critically endangered. Only 5,000 or so of these monkeys left on Sulawesi because they're having a hard go of it. It's, as you might expect, habitat loss.
Right.
It's people cutting down trees for wood and for fields.
The island was formerly big enough to support a viable community of macaques.
Yes, but now Indonesia is one of the most populous nations. It's one of the fastest growing and most populous nations on Earth. I think it might be fifth in population after the right after the United States, or right after Russia, whatever's in fourth now. And just skyrocketing. I think it's the most populous Muslim country.
It is. I knew that. Russia does not have as large a population as one might think.
Russia is shrinking.
And it never had as many people in it as the United States.
We used to be, I think we were briefly fourth after the USSR, but you're right. Russia alone
is like 120,000 people.
It's about the size of Olympia, Washington.
I think it's like 120 million people, a lot less than you might think. There are more people, I think,
there are more Russians in Brooklyn.
There are definitely more people in Pakistan than in Russia.
Yeah. Yeah. And Indonesia would be ahead of them both. Right. Yeah, and Bangladesh is top 10, even though it's tiny. The other reason why macaques are threatened is not just because of a burgeoning population, but because apparently they are awful neighbors.
Oh, they're bad people.
Well, they're bad macaques.
Right.
As people, maybe they're great. But they're pests. They will eat your crops. They'll throw stuff at you from the trees. They're annoying. And when they had a lot of land to themselves, that was fine. They could annoy each other.
I have neighbors like that.
But now they're annoying Indonesian humans, and it's not going well because apparently also they're delicious.
What?
Well, when you live places without a lot of access to protein, meat or other protein, you eat what meat there is.
Bush meat.
We say bush meat for this. And I thought bush meat was just monkeys. But it turns out bush meat is anything unusual you eat because there's nothing else. Like pygmy hippos are a very popular bush meat source in Africa.
Rhinoceros.
And that's why there's not enough pygmy hippos anymore. The term's a little problematic, though, because when a middle-class white person goes into the woods and shoots something, we call it game.
Uh-huh.
It's only when someone in the developing world eats something that we go, ew, bushmeat.
Well, it's you think about the game that we have at our disposal in the Americas and Western Europe, mm-hmm. and we have a fairly limited selection, and most of them are ungulates.
They're deer.
They're deer, and they're hogs and birds.
Rabbits, if you're not hungry.
Right, rabbits, fowl.
They're cute, maybe. So, like, that's no better than killing a pygmy hippo or a cute little monkey.
But when you think about eating like a seal,
I would say if I think about eating a seal.
Have you never thought about eating a seal?
I am right now.
Or a walrus or a whale?
Hold on. I am right now. Tricky. They're big. It seems like they might be very chewy or fatty.
Small seals aren't big. It's right there in the name.
So seals are smaller than you think?
Some. Harbor seals. But yeah, but I think when you...
Being from Alaska, have you eaten a seal or a walrus?
I have had walrus. I've had whale blubber in like dried... form.
I had the chance to eat whale a couple weeks ago in Norway, and I did not do it.
Yeah, you should have tried it.
But I hear it's good. It's like the firmest fish you ever ate with a real kind of nice beefy texture.
I had bear not very long ago in Estonia. It was gamey.
Was it like in some kind of form? Like, was it in a sausage or something? Or could you actually, was it a big, you could, it was a big hunk of bear?
It was in a sausage. You could get a bear steak, but I felt like that was...
I feel like in a sausage, everything tastes like sausage. Like, people would be like, hey, have this rattlesnake sausage. Have this alligator. Guess what? It tastes like sausage. It tastes like cumin or whatever you put in it.
You know, alligator tastes like crawdads or whatever. It just tastes like
it's like a crustacean?
It's just a giant crawdad, yeah.
What a newsflash for the future. Uh-huh. That alligators are a giant shrimp of some kind.
it's the other white meat.
The other pink meat. But it's very sad that these monkeys are getting bushmeated to death because they are, I don't want to say that, you know, maybe this is a selfie culture thing. I don't want to say that only beautiful animals should survive, but certainly, especially beautiful animals should survive.
Well, all right.
And this is like, if we have time, we can save the ugly ones.
Sure, sure, sure.
But if you're making an ark and you've got an ugly monkey and a beautiful monkey, this is a very striking, dignified looking monkey. It's not an ape, but because it's got black fur, it's kind of got the coloration of a mountain gorilla.
Let me ask you,
which makes it look very noble.
Let me ask you this. What if it turns out that the ugly monkeys are the ones that understand science better? Whew. And the beautiful monkeys are like, oh, they're so beautiful, but they turn out to be really callow.
So it's just like humans, is what you're saying.
I say save all monkeys.
If I'm putting them in a zoo where I'm going to look at them.
I see.
I want the pretty ones.
Just if I'm, a pleasure monkey.
If I want them to write my dissertation, if I'm going to give them a million typewriters.
Right.
You're right. Maybe I do want the kind of the nerdy.
Exactly. The nerdy when you monkeys. Open the door to the million monkeys at a million typewriters, you don't want a bunch of beautiful monkeys all grooming themselves.
So
This
is the monkey I want on the runway, right?
This is runway monkey.
They've got kind of a tuft of black hair running down the center of their head, so it's kind of a cute, kind of a sassy look.
So this is the
like Pris.
It's the Pris rather than the Leon.
Exactly.
Okay.
Wait, I don't understand this metaphor at all. Are these characters in Lil Abner?
No, that's a Blade Runner reference. I'm afraid.
Oh, right, Pris. Oh yeah, Pris is Daryl Hannah.
That's right.
Leon is
She's a pleasure model. Leon is the big. He's like
the. He's the guy from Newhart. Right? This is Larry and your brother Daryl.
Leon's the one that doesn't pass the Voight Kampff test.
Oh, Leon dies immediately. He's the doughy one at the beginning.
Yeah, well, not immediately, but yeah, later. Well, no, later. He has the famous scene with Deckard where he slaps a gun out of his hand and then I don't want to get into the whole plot of Blade Runner here.
Doesn't the guy who doesn't pass the test die immediately? Isn't that the first time you see the Voight Kampff? No?
No. Well, no. No, he kills the Voight Kampff operator.
Oh, right.
Leon's like, what are you asking me about my mom for or whatever? And then
I'm really tempted to cut out all this part where I don't remember the plot of Blade Runner because I feel bad.
It's gotta stay in so people have a full and complete understanding of you. They don't think you're just some.
Fine, I got two of the replicants confused. I got the one played by the Newhart guy and the kind of the doughy one confused. Sorry,
the Newhart guy was not a replicant.
Oh right, he was Pris's boyfriend.
No, he wasn't Pris's boyfriend. He's
a toy maker.
He's a toy maker. He might actually be a replicant.
That's my conspiracy theory.
One of the crazy things, but he works for the Tyrell Corporation. Oh boy. You know what?
Why does he make those creepy?
I want this toy taken out just because I'm such a nerd.
This is all just a ploy of mine to get you to go through Blade Runner scene by scene.
So I'm supposed to be the cool one on this show and I sound like a total ding dong. No, no, it's the one with the...
Leon is not the toy maker, Ken. I hope somebody got fired for that blunder. I was saying that this monkey is very hot.
It's a hot monkey.
Striking brown eyes. You know how monkeys, because they look like humans, some monkeys are kind of in this uncanny valley where you're like, you, too human. Like, you look like...
More human than a human.
Just like, you're like one of the coaches in Madden where you don't want to look at them because they kind of look like the real coach, but also they're kind of like scarily moving wrong.
Have you ever stared into the eyes of a gorilla at the zoo?
I do that all the time.
It's insane.
Yeah, you do. So these have the gorilla-like effect where you do feel like this is a person and should not be in this enclosure.
This is an angry person.
Right.
And I'm grateful it's in an enclosure
this person has been here for 60 years and is rightfully pissed.
I would rather he be free, but not free right this second.
As soon as I leave the zoo. As soon as I'm in the gift shop. In 2008, a British photographer named David Slater...
Which is the ultimate British photographer name.
It's pretty good.
David Slater.
He heads to Sulawesi because he's seen pictures of these macaques, photogenic macaques.
British photojournalists do.
Wants to take a picture of them. He's probably heard David Attenborough talk about them. 90% of the world's macaques live in these rugged jungles. But he finds he can't get he finds where the macaques live. He finds he can't get close enough to get the kinds of shots he wants.
I've found that to be true in every discotheque you go to, where the beautiful monkeys are.
The beautiful monkeys just keep dancing away from him.
Can't get past that velvet rope.
So he comes up with a different plan, which is to set up a tripod and see what happens.
So he sets up basically one of those photo booths at a wedding.
Click, 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 click.
It's like, you go for it.
Sometimes this is reported as if it's an automatic tripwire camera, which is a kind of a thing. My dad sent me a picture of when I asked him about some of the legal issues in this case, he sent me a very long legal opinion about the monkey selfie case, including pictures from the 30s of washing bears being, triggered at night in 1903, a photographic trap where a light turns on and a camera shutter takes a quick photo as soon as the raccoon.
We see that all the time in the sort of the naturalist world, where a previously assumed to be extinct species is revealed in a nighttime photo.
Swims up, yeah. In this case, I think Slater is actually holding the tripod, and he's changed all the settings. He's got the shutter and the color and the angle the way he wants it, the lens the way he wants it. But he wants to see what the monkeys will do. And once I think he's still there holding the tripod, but he's kind of facing away and pretending not to pay attention to the monkeys. And just like in a club, that's when they come over.
Exactly.
And they start goofing around with the camera, and they trigger the camera. They whatever he's done to let them activate it, it takes a shot.
And he put the trigger inside a banana.
He's clever like that. He does. He looks at the pictures. He thinks he can do better. Makes further adjustments.
See,
and the monkeys come back. And this time, he gets the sexiest monkey selfie ever taken in history. It's perfectly framed. The monkey is kind of diagonal in the frame, larger than life. Mm-hmm. He's grinning. I hope we can place this in the omnibus, so whoever is listening to this in whatever era can see this picture. The monkey appears to be grinning winningly.
It's like a cover of Interview magazine.
He immediately thinks this is going to be a cover of National Geographic. Yes. This thing is going to be big. He can see it immediately. And after a matter of weeks, he is able to sell it to the Daily Mail, and it goes immediately viral on the internet.
Everyone because the monkey is actually smiling.
Yes, I don't know if it is. Like, when monkeys bare their teeth, sometimes it's aggressive.
But he's mugging. He's got a kind of like a chilled out, stoned look on his face, and he's like, check me out.
It's just what we like about selfies. The personality of the photographer has come through in the picture, even though in this case, the monkey is just kind of setting off the camera pseudo-accidentally.
Well, is that the case?
That becomes the crux of the 5-year, wow. 7-year back and forth over this picture.
Now let me just jump in here and say that I have a personal anecdote that's somewhat relevant here.
Okay, great. Now getting back to the monkey.
My daughter was impossible to photograph as a child because
she is a vampire.
And also if she was aware a camera was pointed at her, she, from a very young age, would plaster on a kind of like, here's my camera face. And her here's my camera face was it felt to me, even when she was 3 years old, that it was dripping with contempt.
So is it a smile, but like a rigor mortis?
A rigor mortis smile. And so a lot of photographs, like her school photos and those important life moment photos of her, are, and I mean, this is just me as her father who wants her to be, you know, to look her best in photos. She just looks like, the look on her face is telling you to go die. And of course I made the classic mistake of trying to intervene when she was young, like, oh no, smile
differently.
Like tickle, which just reinforced the problem. But when she was in first grade, a photographer came to her school and handed the trigger to the children and said, you know, sit on this stool and take a photograph of yourself. And the greatest photograph of her, and I think maybe the greatest photograph that it will be the picture that defines her the rest of her life, is this picture that she took of herself with this trigger. And when I talk to her about it and say, how did you, you know, how did you pose? How did you know to take such a candid, lovely photograph? She says, huh? I wasn't sure what he was trying to do, and I just pushed the button. I don't remember even pushing the button. Like she was not consciously taking a selfie.
She couldn't see herself like you can in a forward facing camera.
No, she just sat on a stool and as far as I can tell, accidentally triggered it, and it utterly captured her essence. And she denies authorship of it, right? When I say, God, that was like, it's such
a... You took a great picture, Marlo.
Because it really is. I mean, it hangs in our house. But she takes no ownership over it.
According to Slater, the monkeys could see themselves because they were looking at their own reflection in the lens. So while they're goofing around with the triggering device, you know, his actual take is that the monkeys were kind of aware of what they were doing.
Huh.
That they were not just curiously happened to be looking in the right direction. But that
they understood how tools worked and how cameras.
Well, they didn't understand they were creating an image, but you know, they were definitely admiring themselves because the lens reflected their faces.
Right, and that is conveyed in this picture, the seminal one. It looks like this monkey's looking at its reflection.
In 2014, after this picture has kind of gone viral on the internet, Wikimedia Commons, which is the
world famous troll organization.
It's the outfit behind Wikipedia that kind of stores all the public domain media. They have, you know, if you want a super high res picture of a El Greco painting or some 19th century photograph or some document by Lincoln or something, you know, they probably have a very high quality public domain scanner. They exist just to provide this stuff to the world with a Creative Commons license, I think. And they posted this picture of a crested macaque under the theory that the artist, the one who took the picture, was the monkey, and copyright cannot vest in a non-human author, and therefore this picture is in the public domain.
This absolutely comports with my feeling about Wikimedia Commons,
it's a huge trollish provocateur. I mean, outfit.
They just the open source community is wonderful, and I love them. But I've had,
every time artists say this,
I've had friends who have gotten into arguments with basically anonymous wiki editors who are sitting somewhere kind of making this sort of philosophical determination of what is and what isn't. And because they are volunteers, right, they're kind of gatekeepers, access keepers.
They have plenty of free time. They don't have jobs.
And they put themselves in a position of, you know, that it's the Wild West out there, and they become authorities, right? And I had a friend that had a radio program that was on NPR, and a wiki editor ruled that the show didn't warrant its own Wikipedia entry.
This happened to a friend of mine. He literally got canceled from Wikipedia after a long debate about whether, you know, whether he was notable enough to get an entry.
Notable enough. And their argument was, we're on NPR. It's an NPR program. And he and this editor, you know, sitting, tilted his fedora back and said,
nope,
I don't think that I don't think the show is prominent enough to.
Now, let me go back to editing my list of chronological errors in Star Trek Voyager episodes.
But what's great about this is that the Wikimedia editor saw this situation and had to have sat and formulated this argument. Wait a minute. The monkey took the picture. Therefore, this is public domain.
It absolutely is in their interest to broaden the definition of public domain as far as possible.
But that's a genius. And the thing is, it's now been in the courts for 8 years, but it's just one like volunteer anonymous wiki editor that sets this whole clockwork in motion. And it feels I hear the troll. I hear the troll voice just dripping off of this.
David Slater did as well. He immediately sued to try to get the rights to his picture back. Because
sued who?
He sued Wikimedia Commons.
Oh.
And you can see why. Like, this is the best picture he's ever taken.
Right.
It's maybe the best, most he ever got paid for a picture.
He flew all the way to...
And suddenly the world has told him that, no, sorry, your best work is actually belongs to the universe because it was a six-year-old crested macaque that pressed the trigger, not you.
And that macaque has no legal standing.
Cannot, yeah.
It's right? That's a double, triple whammy.
Right. And then things get even, speaking of trollish provocateurs in our culture, things get even worse the next year when PETA gets involved.
Oh, here we go.
PETA sees an opening. They sue Slater to say that the picture should not be in the public domain or the rights should not be, should not rest with the photographer. The rights should rest with the monkey. They want a test case showing that monkeys, that animals, can have ownership over their creative work.
The trolls are just lining up.
Because this pushes their idea that, you know, the more legal status, human-like legal status animals can have, the better for them.
I'm super embarrassed right now that I don't have a trollish take on this where I could somehow step in and also file suit on behalf of what? Yeah,
who do you think should have?
I feel like if you
said the tree in the background, you should have some kind of nature conservancy that says this tree owns its own likeness rights.
Right.
According to the law of the state of California, I want to find a California judge that will agree that this teak tree should not be allowed to be in this picture.
If you set up a camera that was triggered when a tree branch blew in the wind and the tree took a photograph of itself when the wind blew, would the tree own the copyright?
That's exactly the kind of edge case you get into. My dad pointed out that you could actually set up a microscope so that when a little amoeba entered the field of view and put out its little pseudopod, it triggered a camera. Would that amoeba then have the rights to your microscope picture?
Cut to someone in a PETA office.
And of course, PETA maybe doesn't even think this is a real legal case. If you've ever seen their modus operandi, it's to do outrageous things and get ink for the plight of animals, and they don't care how patently dumb the thing is, or even how kind of evil it is. I got asked once by PETA to do a spot for them about just not tying up your dog in your backyard. And of course, I love my dog. I don't tie up my dog. I would love to do that, but I didn't want my name associated with the kind of grandstanding that PETA does.
You didn't want a picture of you standing out in front of the opera throwing a bucket of blood on some poor lady's coat.
I'm just holding up the sign that says, I'd rather go naked than wear fur. I mean, so PETA will, if you don't know in the future, PETA is an animal rights organization.
People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
Which is kind of criticized by normal people for their kind of outrageous stunts and by animal rights weirdos for being, you know, media savvy instead of militant.
But we should note, we here at Omnibus believe in the overarching project of animals being recognized as sentient and creatures that do have agency and do have a measure of rights.
And we are not just kissing up because we think you might be lobsters or jellyfish.
No.
We support animal rights in all its forms. But PETA will do things like...
Maybe not all its forms. I mean, I do...
Like PETA has done...
Eat them.
So. PETA has done art installations called Holocaust on Your Plate, where photos from slaughterhouses are juxtaposed with photos from Nazi concentration camps.
Right.
Thus irritating Jews for all the obvious reasons.
Right.
or one called Are Animals the New Slaves, where, you know, chickens in awful chicken farms are juxtaposed with photos of pre-Civil War black slaves in America. And they want you to be pissed off. They love all the grandstanding articles that are going to be written about this, because it just makes people think more about whether they should eat meat.
In a way, they are the perfect – they are the exemplars of our time.
They created troll culture, because they were doing this in magazine ads before the internet was a thing.
Like, these are bad takes.
But they've been really they've been really great at the internet. Like, recently they brought all their lobbying fury to bear on the town of Fishkill, New York, hoping it would change its name.
That's genius. I mean, that's I could get behind that.
They don't really care. They know that Fishkill, New York is maybe not even etymologically related to the killing of fish. I have no idea.
But no, they don't. A kill is like a slew.
Ah, okay. I don't know what a slew is, but is it a little bit like a kill?
A slew and a kill are very similar to one another. Yeah, it's like a...
are they a kind of estuary?
It is a little bit of an estuary.
Let's just pretend it's a kind of estuary so I can nod and
so it's
on.
Not fish kill, like kill the fish. It's like fish estuary.
This is a kill where fish live.
Fish slew.
Right. And PETA doesn't care. They just want, the more hours a day I spend getting mad at them is the more hours I spend thinking about the way we treat animals, which they think is patently... mean and unfair, and is that they're not wrong.
Well, I mean, we live in a region where environmentalists have routinely burned down and blown up buildings and equipment used to harvest timber. Mm-hmm. And most famously, recently, they burned down the University of Washington Horticulture Center at great expense. I mean, it's not recent. It's recent for those of us that are 1,000 years old.
In geological time, this happened in the late 20th century. It's recent to you.
But these were arguments that we, in alternative culture, really were bandying about 25 years ago. Like, is it morally justifiable to burn down the University of Washington Horticulture Center because some small part of it is working to chop down trees.
Interestingly, a lot of these monkey wrench guys have no respect for PETA. They think they are just clowns who are not out there doing the real work because they're not blowing up primate research labs.
Have you always wanted to learn to play an instrument? Maybe you've even tried at some point, but gave up because you felt lessons were too expensive or that you just didn't have the time. Thankfully, there's Musician. Musician is the fun, easy, and affordable way to learn guitar, piano, bass, ukulele, and even singing. Just download the app to your desktop, tablet, or phone and start playing. Musician gives you 24/7 access to a vast catalog of video lessons from professionally trained educators, as well as thousands of exercises and songs across dozens of music genres, all tailored to your goals. And with Musician's award-winning technology that listens to you play, you'll get real-time feedback on timing and accuracy so you can actually see yourself improving as you learn. Start your extended 14-day free trial of Musician's Premium Plus package at musician.com/start. That's unlimited access to thousands of lessons, exercises, and songs on as many instruments as you want for 2 whole weeks. Just go to musician.com/start. That's musician.com/start.
So PETA files this suit thinking, how great would this be? Imagine the headlines, like, monkey wins copyright to his own. Weirdly, in their filing, they name the macaque, which I don't know why they would have any basis to do that.
What do they call him?
They call him Naruto. I assume after the anime. I want to say some wrong things about Naruto so you can correct me at great length.
Oh my God. How did this get into a weeaboo episode?
In the first season of Naruto, okay, I don't know anything about Naruto, but I think it's manga or anime anyway. And you might ask, what legal standing would PETA have to file this? And they argued that they would have next friend standing. The next friend principle in law means that if for some reason somebody's out of commission, physically unable to file suit on their own behalf, then...
And there's no family member.
Right, that someone else can. And PETA says, well, who if, you know, the macaque can't.
Right. If not us, who?
If not a prominent animal rights organization
if
like us, who?
Now, when?
Exactly. So there's two simultaneous suits going on. Who owns this photo? Is it Slater? Is it Naruto, the scurrilously named monkey? Or is it no one? Is it the universe?
And it really, I mean, the thing it starts me thinking is... that this whole idea of copyright ownership and in fact modern society is all just a jam up, and that really, we're all just naked monkeys and none of this is real.
That's why I've been resampling all the Longwinders records for my dance videos.
Money is fake.
And there's nothing you can do about
it. And everything is fake.
So I said earlier that that Slater filed suit against Wikimedia Commons. I don't think he ever actually did that in any legal theater. I think it was he sent letters and said, please remove my photo.
He filed suit in the court of public opinion.
And of course, that, you know, the tech world, you know, turned into a thousand monkeys writing think pieces
Ars
about
Technica.
This. But Wikimedia ended up leaving the photo up. And as you point out, like, it's certainly in their interest to have the broadest possible definition of the public domain.
Right.
And
Wikimedia is often in controversy because, well, and it's the whole thing of the internet. If you leave it wide open, then the child pornographers and the, you know, the like murder people all rush in. And as soon as you try to limit them and put restrictions on it, then all of a sudden the freedom of speeches and everything, you know, the libertarians, the intellectual libertarians all are like, wait a minute, who's in charge now?
So you have to decide who's worse, pedophiles or libertarians. And that's tricky.
It is tricky.
It's a tough one.
I mean, they're both all pretty right. bad.
But both
sides can.
But the PETA case actually does go in front of a district court judge who immediately dismisses it, saying no, animals can't own copyright. Like, this is ridiculous.
Sure. He probably wrote lol right on his decision.
PETA appeals to the Ninth Circuit.
Of course they do.
And maybe that outcome's in a little more jeopardy.
Every time you give $5 to PETA, this is where they're spending it.
The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has just a massive room full of PETA filings out back. And in this case, before a judgment can be reached, Slater and PETA reach a settlement whereby he agrees to donate a certain number of revenue from the photo to wildlife preserves in Sulawesi. So
it seems like he...
That seems out of character for PETA.
Yeah, but it seems like he was going to do that anyway.
He's having a rough time. You know, he has already lost, because of the Wikimedia stuff, he has lost a ton of revenue. He estimates that he's lost 10,000 pounds from the, you know, so over $10,000 from the from losing the rights to this picture. He can't even pay his own lawyer. He's thinking of becoming a tennis coach or a dog walker, getting out of wildlife photography altogether because he can't make a go of it.
That's a common thread of a creative person who's been backed against a wall. They say, you know what? I'm just going to quit and become a tennis coach.
I think it's more like it's because most creative people are actually supplementing their income as a tennis coach or a dog walker.
I certainly am.
So you can always say that, right? Or an omnibus podcaster. Interestingly, I was looking up kind of what the similar case law might be, and the case law is actually trending toward the photographer and away from the monkey in this case. Photographers are getting broader and broader rights on what their intellectual property rights, what their intellectual property consists of. Here's a couple eye-opening 2011 cases. One is the case of Eva Marie Painter versus Standard Verlags, some kind of Austrian or German newspaper. She took a picture, a portrait of just a child at some point, which later got widespread when the child was kidnapped a few years later, and that was the only photo that existed. So the photo was spread far and wide, and when the child was eventually recovered after some awful surviving in a basement ordeal, the newspapers used kind of a stylized digital version of her photograph to illustrate the story. And she sued, and the courts found that, no, I mean, even though this is just a kind of a Sears portrait kind of a thing, there were creative decisions involved, and she should have rights that trump the rights of the public to see an illustrated version of the kidnapping story, of the true crime needs of the public, I guess. The weirder case in Britain is Temple Islands Collection Limited versus New English Teas Limited. Temple Island is an outfit that somehow owned the rights to an iconic photo of a double-decker London bus crossing Westminster Bridge right in front of the Houses of Parliament and Big Ben. Maybe you've seen the picture. As it's usually printed, the bus is brightly tinted red, whereas the rest of the photograph is monochrome.
Yeah, it's a thing you can get a print of at IKEA.
It's an iconic souvenir thing that you could put on your wall at IKEA next to your Eiffel Tower print and your Audrey Hepburn's face print. And in this case, New English Teas wanted to license it for their tin of tea. It appears on a lot of souvenirs. and they couldn't come to a deal with the rights holders. So New English Tees went out on the bridge and took a picture from a slightly different angle of a bus crossing Westminster Bridge with Big Ben and the Houses of Parliament looking much as they do, and tinted it to match the effect in the original photo. And Temple Island Collection sued, saying it's not just that we own that particular photo. The photographer's work was all coming up with the idea to take a photo like this. And so if you just duplicate his work, then we own the rights to the idea of a single bus crossing London Bridge or crossing Westminster Bridge, which seems like a bit of an overreach to me. But the court found for the original bus rights holders, saying that, yeah, you got to take into account things like motif and visual angle and illumination. And the tea company said, hey, we've got prior art. People have taken pictures like this of a bus and used it on souvenirs. And the court said, oh, that's actually not relevant here.
Really?
Like, these guys now apparently own not just their photo, but the idea of taking a photo like that, which gives a photographer like Slater or anybody else very broad rights to what they can say they own.
Well, it's a... within my own artistic community, about 10 years ago, between 5 and 10 years ago, there was a lot of controversy around the idea, which seems to be a very new notion, that documenting someone else's performance is in and of itself a artwork.
What are we thinking about here? Like a photo at a concert? Or recording
recording someone's
bootleg of a
a bootleg of someone's comedy performance is your own creative work. So I would do these festivals, and comedians are traditionally say, please don't record my performance, I'm just trying out new material, or you know, the novelty of a joke is an important sort of part of its saleability, right? You don't want to go see a comedy show where you know all the jokes already. And there was a lot of pushback from the community of
the fans,
because people really asserted that their art was recording your comedy performance.
That's the true artist, the guy who thought of pressing a button on his phone.
So it's as recording things, as to the technology of being able to capture and archive things, gets more and more varied, and the ability to, I mean, in the past it was a storage problem. Like, how the heck would you're not going to take a 2-inch tape machine to a concert, right? Bootleggers, it all sounded terrible. But now if you
and 100 years ago, you'd have to go into the gallery and paint a copy of the painting.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
This is all very new stuff over human history.
But does a person who just sets up a camera and pushes record, do they have, like, what are their rights to that recording? And do those rights trump the rights of the person that, I mean, I've had people refuse to let me use photographs they've taken of me. Not for commercial purposes, but just like, hey, that picture, it's really great, I'd like to have a copy of it. And they're like, well,
not a professional photographer, a fan.
No, professional photographer that has.
I've had that happen to me.
That's taken a picture of me and then put their watermark across it, right. And I'm like, you know, that's great and everything, but like, it's of me.
I've asked for a quote for a picture of me.
Yeah.
For, you know, that I could, I, what would it take to have me have, you know, rights to this and to use this in perpetuity? And it was thousands of dollars for a picture of me in front of a white background,
which seems weird. I mean, and I don't know what the legal what the legal language would say in a situation where I was like, well, I don't want you to use a photograph of me.
I was raised by, my dad's an intellectual property lawyer.
Right.
So I was raised with stories about prior art and likelihood of confusion. This was the mother's milk.
This is what you sat around the dinner table talking about.
So I asked my dad about the monkey selfie case in particular. And he says that the two-prong test for infringement is generally access and similarity. If a derivative work is very similar to yours, and in a case like these, it's identical. It's somebody recording something that someone said. So similarity is 100%. And access just means, you know, could they have, You don't even need evidence that they were intentionally trying to copy the work. If they had access to it, that's how you can get somebody. Like George Harrison, you know, to this day thinks he did not consciously copy the Chiffons' "He's So Fine" when he wrote "My Sweet Lord." But when the judge saw that the chord changes were all the same and that Harrison said, "Yeah, of course I know that song. It's a classic. I heard that on the radio all the time." That's game over, because he had access and similarity. Doesn't matter whether he meant to, doesn't matter what his intention is. And so, you know, it's a really tricky area. Like what it brings up the question of what art even is, you know, right. If art's not the set of pixels, if art is just the idea of, and that's kind of what art has become, right? The more conceptual art gets, my installation is this guy hitting himself in the groin with a hammer,
right?
Then, you know, somebody could be copying that even if it was a different person and a different gallery and a different hammer.
This is not a pipe.
The idea, exactly. The idea is still there once art becomes more reproducible.
My art is you being outraged at me stealing your art. And that concludes the monkey selfie. Entry 803 MT2220. Certificate number 2720 in the brand new independent omnibus.
Or as we call it, omnibus.
Futurelings, in the unlikely event that social media still exists in your era, please remember, populate your feed with occasional selfies. It doesn't have to just be selfies. It shouldn't be.
If you have some physical corporeal form that does not stop the passage of light, and therefore does not leave a filmic image, you have options. Perhaps you could write a poem or leave us some kind of a printout of your waveform.
Right.
Every time you
tattoo of your heartbeat.
Sure. It doesn't have to be visual.
And by tattoo, I mean the usage of the word tattoo to mean a rat-a-tat-tat.
Like a snare drum.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I mean by a tattoo. Like when I say I'm going to go get a tattoo, I mean I want to walk into a parlor where somebody gets a snare drum and plays a little Pogues tattoo at me.
You can go to our social media feeds at Omnibus Project. There are zero selfies there, although maybe that's going to change.
Should we start posting selfies?
Something. So far we've only posted...
I guess isn't the banner of that site a selfie?
Oh, that's right.
I guess we didn't take it.
My sister took that
picture. Does it count if your sister takes it?
Huh. I mean,
we made a lot of the creative choices in that picture.
Where my identity and my sister's identity blend, where a body meets a body coming through the rye.
We did not just hand your sister a triggering device and she accidentally... did monkey faces and pressed a
no true
and pressed a button while somebody played the didgeridoo at her chakras. No,
she has the copyright to that photo.
She does.
But you can go to at Ken Jennings and at John Roderick, where you will find the tweets, which are a form of selfie. Ken is always selfieing.
I find that even when I like take a picture of like a, you know, if I'm promoting a book or a friend's book, I will put the book in my hand for some reason to make the post a little more selfie, like to make the connection a little more corporeal.
It's Ken. He's real.
I can prove I own this book. My hand is holding it.
And log, then, but then people
just
log.
Do you know what people do? Then they just own your nails. They'll just be like, nice nails, dummy. Or way to scratch your thumb, loser.
And then there's always the person that's like, I can trace your location through the reflection in your fingernails.
One of my favorite things is eBay photos where the photographer is nude. Yeah. Have you seen this? Somebody selling a bottle or a TV.
I remember them when they were on when they were like in the Penny Saver. I mean, that's an old trick. Like, check out these shiny hubcaps I've got for sale.
And you were always using it to try to see a guy in his jockeys.
Yeah, I was hoping that I could
sneak a peek.
Maybe get a little glint. You can email us at theomnibusproject@gmail.com and send us, by all means, send us your selfies. Ken will filter them and only send me the good ones.
I will only send you on the not safe for work ones.
Mm-hmm. I'm on Instagram, which, as we've already discussed, is like selfie paradise. Ken is not. He's there. He just lurks.
I don't think I've ever posted anything. I just look at pictures of my nieces and nephews.
You make snarky comments every once in a while.
Just for you.
Yeah. We strongly encourage you, especially now that Omnibus is an independent enterprise, to go to our Facebook Futurelings group, the Omnibus Futurelings. I know that you probably don't like Facebook and you have a lot of reservations about it. Listen, you and me both, friend.
But we have gotten rid of one of the possibly problematic corporate partners. So so the Futurelings page is you know, twice as woke now.
Yeah, it's super woke. It's super. It's a free zone. Come hang out there. The people there are very smart.
Everything they post belongs to us.
I almost never get super bent out of shape about somebody's post and go leave a long, haughty, outraged response.
You just text it to me instead.
It happens sometimes, though. I won't deny it. Also, you can send us things like Polaroid selfies and your grandpa's old sunglasses. I wear your granddad's clothes. Look incredible.
Send us a photo of you reflected in your grandpa's Ray-Bans.
To P.O. Box 55744, Shoreline, Washington 98155.
If they wanted to send us digital things, they could send it to...
I said already, the Omnibus Project at gmail.com.
And if they wanted to send us financial support, where would they do that, John?
At Patreon/Omnibus Project.
Patreon.com/Omnibus Project.
Patreon.com/Omnibus Project is where you can become a supporter and a member. Are you going to be a member? Yeah, be a member.
This is kind of an academic project, right? What do those kinds of things have? They have, if you go to the ballet, like...
Oh, right. Supporters. Right?
Patrons?
Patrons. It's right there in the name, Patreon.
Do you think they know that? Do you think that they know that if they got rid of the E, it would just be patron? What a fortuitous coincidence.
I know the people that started Patreon, and I think they do know that.
Listeners, from our vantage point here in your distant past, we have no idea how long our civilization survived. Now that the show is independent, we're hoping for a while.
You seem really moved.
Well, I was just thinking, if this really is the last show and we put out one independent omnibus and then the meteor hits, boy, will our faces be red. And probably the rest of our body briefly. We hope and pray that the catastrophe we fear may never come. But if the meteor comes soon, this recording, like all our recordings, may be our final word to you. The first and last independent omnibus. But we certainly hope that Providence will allow us to return to you soon for another entry in the omnibus.